It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal. Thank you for joining us. It's always good to have you. On today's show, we will, of course, be starting with a little bit of news. Then we'll be taking some listener questions. We will be discussing the burning issue, is the Republican Party a cult? And if time permits, we'll talk a little bit about privatization and our rush to replace government with private actors. First, starting in the news, it's been a difficult week for corporate America. Turns out the business model of online ads is under threat. Chase, for instance, has just announced that they will be pulling some of their online ads because they seem to show up in places that they don't want them to show up, such as white supremacist websites next to articles promoting white supremacy. Chase thinks that's a bad thing and not good for its business image, and until Google can figure out how to solve that problem, they want to pull some of their ads. Ironically, the KKK and other white supremacists have responded by saying, wait a minute, our articles are appearing next to ads by Chase? We want our articles pulled. I mean, we may be scum, but Jesus, we have our limits. We're not a big bank. Also on that note, of course, in the news just recently, advertisers have begun pulling their ads from Bill O'Reilly's show. Turns out that being a serial sexual harasser and misogynist may not necessarily be good for business. It's, of course, wonderful for the President of the United States, but may not necessarily be so good for the images of businesses that advertise on O'Reilly. While this excites many of us, we also have to remember not to be too excited. So far, the advertisers are pulling their ads from Bill O'Reilly's show, moving them to other parts of Fox News. Presumably, as soon as the public's eyes are turned elsewhere, they will find their way back to O'Reilly. Why? He promises a large audience, and more importantly, Fox News is a wonderful venue for advertisers. The target market of many advertisers, the demographic of Fox News, is similar. Advertisers like people who are stupid and believe every piece of crap that they read or hear, i.e., Fox News viewers, viewers who turn into Bill O'Reilly. If you're willing to believe that bullshit, you're probably willing to believe the car commercial or beer commercial or whatever the hell comes in between. That's right, you're 60 years old, balding with a pot belly, but if you just drink that Corona, 20-something-year-old gorgeous models are going to have sex with you. Fox News is a perfect venue for advertisers, specifically because they appeal to the kind of people who don't critically think enough to know the difference between an advertisement and something that might actually make sense for them. This story figures to continue for a little while. Also in the news, Justice Department is to review federal consent decrees with local police. It's not a good time for white supremacists with corporate America, but thank goodness in the Trump administration, white supremacists are their base. No problem there. Police officers who have a problem with black people, it's open season again. Some of us remember going through a period of the last few years where police executions of people of color were caught on cell phone cameras. For many people, there seemed to be a rise in the number of police killings of unarmed and innocent people. More likely, it's just a statement of how things get better when information is available. And the fact that most of us now carry cell phones with cameras makes it a little more difficult to execute people without reason. Once this information started coming out, police forces reacted in a way, some of them, the way that they should have. Many of them did not. Police, in many cases, were not held accountable. At some point in class, a year or so ago, I made some comment about a few bad actors in police departments. And I was rightly corrected by one of my students who pointed out that when you've got a system of a complete lack of accountability, when you've got a system where views of people of color and people who may be on the margins of our society are overwhelmingly negative, when you combine those things, immunity from any kind of accountability, with bigotry and stereotypes about the people you're dealing with, that's naturally going to lead to bad things happening. Some of the more progressive police departments had to reach out in large to change their policies, in large part because the United States Justice Department stepped in. The United States Justice Department had to step in part because of the nature of the relationship between the police and prosecutors. It turns out that local authorities are frequently unable to police the police by themselves. Their working relationship is too close. They are too reliant upon each other. Prosecutors need a good relationship with the police. You don't get that good relationship by bringing enforcement actions against the police. So the Justice Department under President Obama stepped in and said that we will be taking over some of these prosecutions, and more than that, forcing consent decrees with local police forces that had a history of violence or racial discrimination. The Justice Department now, under Attorney General Jim Crow, has decided that these consent decrees are not necessary. Ironically, this is another case where most of the police departments involved are perfectly happy with the consent decrees. In fact, making for a better environment for them. Let it be known, by the way, before I get attacked for this, that this is not an attack on police officers who perform a necessary public service. Just like asking that a child predatory teacher should be punished is not an attack on teachers, it's an attack on child predators. Criminal police officers, like everybody else, should be held to account. Any police officer who wants to do his or her duty properly should appreciate that, as their fellow officers who are out of control make things worse for them. Well, things apparently are about to get a whole lot worse. I guess, thank goodness, somebody's out there sticking up for the advantaged. Also recently in the news, we thought it had gone away, but it's back. That's right, the Republicans are working on a new health care deal. It turns out that accepting failure is not an option in the Republican Party. Accepting a lousy healthcare deal that will destroy the lives and end the lives of tens of thousands and millions of Americans, that's acceptable. That's fine. But you just got to get a deal. So what's the new proposal that's coming back? Well, it turns out in order to get the Freedom Caucus members who initially balked at a deal that wasn't seen as punitive enough, didn't throw enough people out of health care, didn't hurt enough women. The administration is back, Republican leaders in Congress are back, with a health care proposal designed to appeal to the Freedom Caucus members, i.e., a health care proposal that will make sure that nobody has the health care they need. Certainly not poor people, certainly not women. As I read about the healthcare deal, I am unfortunately reminded of the famous quip by former longtime Congressman Barney Frank, who said, "Republicans believe that life begins at conception and ends at birth." Women will not be able to get abortions, but they won't be able to get maternity care either. Stay tuned for this one. The one thing we had to be excited about, they may be taking that away from us as well. Occupying the news right now is the filibuster of Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. The question being raised, should the Democrats be using the filibuster now, or should they be saving it? Why the hell should they be saving it? Many Democrats have pointed out that if we're saving it for the next Supreme Court appointee, who would lock in a Republican majority for a very long time, a conservative majority for a very long time, what's the point of that? If they're going to take it away now, they're going to take it away next time. We might as well filibuster now. The response to that from thinking people is, well, there are two out of 52 Republican senators who aren't brain-dead, stupid conservative, who may give the smallest iota about the competence of government. That's right, I'm speaking of Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine. Counting on any Republican to act for the good of the country, as opposed to their own personal interests and the good of the party, is a fool's errand. In any event, Democrats should filibuster, as so far they are, and should stick with that filibuster, the nomination of Neil Gorsuch. Why? Because they are clearly in the right. As we talked about last time, occasionally you have to stand up for something that actually matters and something you believe in. The Republicans are stealing a Supreme Court appointment, and it's about to go through. They've already announced that they're going to get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court appointments. Let it be clear to the 52% of Americans capable of basic thought what they are doing and the coup that they are undertaking. But the Democrats should stand up with the filibuster because it's the right thing to do. Republicans shouldn't be able to steal a Supreme Court appointment. The party that has lost six of the last seven presidential election popular votes should not get to say that they are the only ones who speak for the people. A party that has said that the people should decide the Supreme Court appointment, which is why they refuse to do their constitutional job of considering Obama's centrist nominee, Merrick Garland, instead replacing him with an ultra-conservative nominee in Neil Gorsuch. Their stated reason was that they're standing up for the people and the people should have a voice. As we noted last week, the people had a voice. They voted for Hillary Clinton. The people had a voice. They voted for Democratic senators. Unless they're talking about the people of Russia, the Republicans' words should be thrown back at themselves, and the Democrats should be hammering on this for a long time. Democratic voters aren't like Republican voters, but maybe if the arguments are presented over a period of time, we can get angry too. Finally, for the news, the story of coal. Yes, Donald Trump has come out and appealed to Appalachia. Coal miners in Appalachia, I'm going to take your jobs back for you. I'm going to get them back. We're going to get the coal jobs back. Because it's awful Obama regulations that have cost you your jobs. And if we just get rid of those regulations, your jobs will come back and we will all be swimming in beautiful coal. The problem is, as been pointed out by anyone who knows what they're talking about on the subject, it wasn't Obamacare rules regarding coal that destroyed these coal miners' jobs. It was the free market. There are better substitutes. It was technological advances that have reduced the need for coal miners and have, in fact, created many coal mining jobs that can't be filled by many coal miners with the skills that they have, most of whom do not have a college education for jobs that increasingly require technological skills. The jobs are probably not coming back under any circumstances. Other technological changes that will ensure that they don't come back is the way we do mining. Used to send miners down in the mines. That still happens as well. But now, increasingly, mining is done through something called mountaintop removal mining. In a rare display of a term that actually means what it says, mountaintop removal mining is just what it says. You blow off the tops of mountains in order to get to the coal seams underneath. That's right, you blow up mountains, leaving scarred landscapes, damming up rivers and creeks that people rely on, including coal miners whose jobs may not be coming back. So now they won't have jobs, they also won't have water. They won't have the creeks and the rivers that they're used to, because coal companies are used to blowing up the mountains, damming up these rivers and streams, and having absolutely no responsibility for doing anything about it. Some responsibility was heaped upon them by Obama. The Trump administration has already announced that they will be rescinding those rules. That's right. Unlike your children, coal companies don't need to clean up after themselves. But maybe Trump is onto something. Maybe if we bring back obsolete industries, it'll be a good thing. Maybe all those people who lost their jobs in the typewriter factory can get their jobs back. Maybe people who worked on the telegraph could get their jobs back. How about people who made buggy whips? Some of these were skilled laborers making very complicated buggy whips. Let's bring back the buggy whip industry. Even better, an example that may be way closer to coal. How about all those lead miners who lost their jobs when we outlawed leaded gasoline and lead paint? Couldn't we bring their jobs back by just stunting the intellectual development of a whole bunch more children? Why not? Let's bring lead back. Let's mine for lead. Coal's on the way out because it's an obsolete industry that destroys the planet, and there are substitutes that are available that are better. What should be done with coal miners? I do not lack sympathy for coal miners. As I indicated in our very first show, these people may be too stupid to vote for the people who actually want to help them, but I don't care. I will stand up for them despite all their kicking and screaming. Hillary Clinton and other Democratic leaders proposed job retraining that will allow these people to work in industries that won't destroy their lungs, won't destroy their lives, and actually will still be here 10 or 20 years from now. These people could be trained to work on solar farms. For instance, some of these mountains that are no longer there have very flat surfaces. So we could stick solar panels on some of those, presumably. One last thought on mountaintop removal mining. I think it's kind of remarkable that the Republicans have not yet renamed that. I assume Frank Luntz, the Republican spinmeister, is busy working on this one even as we speak. If you want to promote something, you don't call it mountaintop removal mining. How about Rampaging Streams Protection Act? Someone's got to stop those rampaging streams. How about the stream flood control? If you dam up the streams, they're less likely to flood. And maybe my favorite, here's some suggestions, Frank. You're free to use them. The Rolling Hills Promotion Act. The Sound of Music Promotion. The hills are alive with the sound of music. Rolling hills, because when you blow the crap out of the tops of mountains, maybe you're left with rolling hills. Anyway, that's the news for this week, or some of it that we think is most relevant to you. Now on to listener questions. The first question comes from Kara from College Point, New York. What do you think of Trump being involved in possible collusion? I'm guessing that Kara, by your asking that question, you're referring to collusion with Russia and Russian agents. If you're referring to collusion involving financial conflicts of interest, what do I think? I think this administration is pathetic at how many conflicts of interest they have and how obvious it is that they are running this country for their own benefit and not for the benefit of this country. I'm assuming that you're talking more about Russia. What do I think of his being involved? Well, of course, we don't know yet whether he is involved. I'd like to say he is, but I'm not on conservative talk radio, so I won't make it up. You hear that, Susan Rice? What do I think of Trump possibly being involved? I don't know. Sometimes he seems to micromanage, and sometimes he seems absolutely oblivious with what's going on around him in his administration. He's certainly not concerned about policy. So I don't know what his role is, but I will say that the situation is looking worse and worse by the day. Mark from Brooklyn, his second question, asks a related question regarding Russia. How serious are these allegations? And I'll finish with Kara and Mark's question together since they relate to one another. How serious are these allegations? Well, we don't know yet. The allegations, I guess, are very serious. The possibility that the president-elect of the United States, now president of the United States, colluded with a hostile foreign power to undermine the interests of the American public so that he could gain power and instead push the interests of a foreign rival. That's pretty close to as bad as it gets. If these allegations are true and are shown to go all the way up to Donald Trump, it's hard to imagine that even a Republican Congress would be able to prevent the impeachment of the president. We don't know that. What we do know is that everyone involved on the Trump staff has been lying about this pretty much every chance they get. Some on the left were all excited the other day when former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who was forced to step down when the public found out that he had lied about his contacts with Russia before Trump became president, underscore there, not when Trump found out. When Trump found out that he had lied, Trump didn't do anything. But when the public found out he lied, then Trump had to do something. Let's be clear on that. We were all excited a few days ago when he said, well, if you give me immunity, I will testify and I will have things to say. Well, even that, don't get too excited. It seems pretty clear that Flynn has violated several laws, serious laws, and prison is a real threat for him. He didn't register as a foreign lobbyist when he was lobbying for Turkey. Add that to the fact that he did not have any contacts, that he did not disclose his contacts with Russia, and he is in serious legal jeopardy. Now, some of you might say, if he was doing all this stuff that's blatantly illegal, why did he get named National Security Advisor? Well, if you're asking that question, you're obviously not a Trump voter. If you're a Trump voter, you're saying, oh, get over the Russia thing already. It could be very serious. At the very least, we know there's a cover-up. We know that there's been lying, including under oath, about what's gone on. We know that the administration has been awfully quick to spread lies to try to change the subject from the investigation of the Russia ties. It creates a damning overall picture. But we're not going to jump to conclusions. We'll say, hold on. Some heads are going to roll. That we can expect. The administration has tried to make Flynn a sacrificial lamb. Maybe that will get him angry enough to fight back. Chances are they will make him a sacrificial lamb and then promise him a multi-million dollar job at Fox News if he just keeps his mouth shut. That's what usually happens. And they'll bribe him and everybody else into making sure that we don't get to the top. It could be not much, but it could be treason on the highest level that I've seen, and I've been around for a while. Okay. Excuse me. When I was young, I hate to start a sentence with that, but when I was young, I expect that most of my listeners are too young to remember this. But there was a time when the biggest threat to America seemed to be cults. That's right, religious cults. Every week, it seemed, there was another movie of the week about how the cultists came and stole my daughter. There was an industry of people whose job it was to kidnap children who had joined cults, kidnap them back, retrain them, and deliver them back to their parents. Like we're all concerned about terrorists today, for a while, it was the cultists. They were all coming to get us. Obviously, the Manson family way back when showed us the negative side of cults. Then we had the Jim Jones Guyana tragedy, where people followed a cult leader to the extent that they poisoned themselves. That's where the term, they really drink the Kool-Aid, comes from. A little bit of trivia for those of you who don't know that. When you say, boy, he really drank the Kool-Aid, i.e. speaking about someone who believes anything that Donald Trump says, boy, he's going to believe every piece of crap that comes out of that guy's mouth. He really drank the Kool-Aid. It was because they put the poison in Kool-Aid. In the Jim Jones tragedy, that we got the term, they really drank the Kool-Aid. At the time, one of the most nefarious cults that we knew about were the Moonies. The Reverend Sun Myung Moon and his Unification Church, that at one point held what I believe is still the largest mass wedding in the history of America. And I believe the Felt Forum or Madison Square Garden, where people in his cult were told who they were going to marry. And I think thousands of them got married at the same time. The ceremony performed by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. They were the great danger to our society, the cultists. That's why it was pretty ironic just a few years ago. Oh, how the world turns. Just a few years ago, we had a Republican president who said that his source for news was a newspaper owned by none other than the Reverend Sun Myung Moon's Unification Church, the Washington Times. That's right. This is like 20 years from now. A president says, I only get my news from the Al-Qaeda network. The ISIS network. That's what it was like when President Boy George said, I only get my news from the Washington Times. It turns out, of course, we've managed to get even worse than that now. We have a president who gets his news from Breitbart and Fox and Friends. But at the time, it was still pretty shocking. Republicans hadn't quite stooped quite that low. It was pretty shocking to hear the cultists back in the mainstream. But then you give it some thought and you think, how fitting that the Republican Party gets in league with cultists. This political party, after all, for all intents and purposes, is a cult. I looked up in the dictionary basic definitions of what a cult is. An instance of great veneration of a person, ideal, or thing, especially as manifested by a body of admirers. This is the cult of personality that has defined the Republican Party for more than a generation, for two generations. Perhaps beginning with Ronald Reagan. And when I say Ronald Reagan, I look heavenward, where he is sitting on a throne next to Jesus. Maybe above Jesus, hard to know, Ronald Reagan or Jesus, who's better? We'll leave that for a future show, Ronald Reagan or Jesus, who's the greater man? Ronald Reagan sitting on his throne, Republican Party, everyone who runs for president of the United States. Who's your favorite philosopher? Jesus, Ronald Reagan. Jesus, Ronald Reagan. Jesus, Ronald Reagan. And I don't mean Jesus and Ronald Reagan. I mean Jesus, Ronald Reagan, of course. What are you talking about? Jesus, Ronald Reagan. Dude, Ronald Reagan. You have Republican debates where the debates boil down to, I'm more Reagan than you are. Oh, no, I'm more Reagan than you are. Look at my hair. Look at the way I hold myself. I've been in a movie even. The best is that the average Republican voter doesn't know shit about Ronald Reagan. Who was a bit of a moron while he was president, maybe more than a bit, and whose legacy is not at all what they think he is. It is. Starting with the fact that Ronald Reagan is still responsible for the largest tax increase in American history. Ronald Reagan, while he started the Republican slide into extremism and cultism, was not nearly as extreme in many respects as current Republicans. And I can't believe I have to say that. having lived through the Reagan presidency and understood the threat that that posed, I now look back to the glory days where we were led by more competent people like Ronald Reagan. Where do we see this? Well, the 2012 election campaign gave us an interesting example. Republicans look for a hero, for an idol that they can worship, just like a cult of personality. Who will be the next Reagan? The reincarnation of Ronald Reagan, that's who we're looking for. The 2012 election campaign figured to be the coronation of Mitt Romney, who'd put in his time, raised a lot of money, and was due to become the Republican Party nominee for President of the United States. But the Republican base of lunatics did not like Mitt Romney. He wasn't crazy enough for them. He also wasn't the kind of person you rallied your cult around. He wasn't that inspiring a figure. So the 2012 election campaign saw a succession of Republican heroes, saviors, people who are going to swoop in at the last minute and save the Republican Party from a sensible human being, perhaps reasonably sensible human being, like Mitt Romney. There was Fred Dalton Thompson, who was Reagan's heir, because he was in movies too. He was in movies. Ronald Reagan was in movies. He's got to be the one. He even played the president in movies. He's got to be the one. And then he spoke. And it turns out he wasn't the one. I kind of want to be president, maybe. A little bit of president. Really wasn't inspiring. Didn't seem to have his heart in it. Wasn't someone who had the personality that you could form a cult around. There was Michelle Bachmann. She who had the credentials to appeal to the right. She was brain dead stupid. That's right. She got her vaccination policy by standing on a line and hearing someone behind her talk about her experiences with vaccines. Well, turns out Michelle Bachmann kind of flamed out too. She had the mistake of actually speaking out loud, and there were just enough people in the Republican Party to say, hey, you know what? She really is fucking stupid. I'm not sure I can really vote for her. But then, of course, to swoop on the scene and save the day like underdog was Rick Perry. That's right. Rick Perry was going to be the one. He's the perfect Republican, a former governor of Texas who had supposedly shot a coyote while jogging. One, he shot a coyote. Two, how cool is this guy that he carries his gun while he goes jogging? He was perfect. But then he showed up at a debate. And remember, he couldn't count to three. Yes, there's three government departments that I will be eliminating when I make it to office. One, two, and what was it? Education, commerce, and whoops. Oh, this is embarrassing. I can't remember what the third one is. Well, Rick, you found the third one. It's the department you're now heading. The energy department. By the way, you were going to eliminate it. It was kind of fun that it turns out, once you were named to head the energy department, you said, wow, this is what the energy department does? I thought it just provided oral sex to oil company executives. I didn't realize it was in control of nuclear weapons. Something he might have thought of before he decided to eliminate the department. But anyway, he's running the department. You should feel better. Because Rick Perry now wears glasses. So he's a lot smarter than that old Rick Perry who didn't wear glasses. The whole idea of Trumpism is the cult of personality. Following Donald Trump, believing every lie out of his mouth, the ones that are proven and you can't avoid seeing that they're lies, doesn't matter. It's still Trump. I still believe in him no matter what. The whole aura of Trump is cultism, the cult of personality. People who refuse to see truth, refuse to see reason, instead want to follow a leader. Another definition of a cult is a religion or sect considered to be false, unorthodox, or extremist, with members often living outside of conventional society under the direction of a charismatic leader. Thanks to dictionary.com, I believe, for that one. In other words, people who are so crazy religious that they're out of their freaking minds. People who put their fantasy ahead of facts. People who don't use reason. Religious extremists. Maybe Scientologists. It's in vogue to be talking rightly about Scientology as a cult. But that also describes the Republican Party. A party that is anti-science, anti-education, anti-fact, and anti-reason. Donald Trump talks about making America great again. People ask, when was America great? What time period do you want to unwind us to? I think the best argument, the best answer to that is pre-Enlightenment, when people decided to use facts and reason to come up with what they believe rather than religious fantasy that they pull out of their butts. Here's what a couple of people are saying about the current Republican Party. And by a couple of people, I mean Republicans. Ben Bernanke, the former chair of the Federal Reserve, on commenting on being driven out of the Republican Party. I had lost patience with Republican susceptibility to the know-nothingism of the far right. I didn't leave the Republican Party. I felt that the party left me. David Frum, Boy George's main speechwriter, a reliable Republican, said several years ago, long before the rise of Trump, if what you are is a pragmatic, business-oriented, moderate-minded person who wants things to work in a fairly competent and ethical way, and you're under 30, the kind of person who would have been an Eisenhower Republican and a Republican in the Nixon years and in the George H.W. Bush years, you are a Democrat today. And maybe most eye-opening, from Norman Ornstein, a longtime conservative fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, very conservative American Enterprise Institute, co-wrote a book that came out in 2012, a guy by the name of Thomas Mann, wrote a book that came out in 2012. This is a longtime Republican. However awkward it may be for the traditional press and nonpartisan analysts to acknowledge, one of the two major parties, the Republican Party, has become an insurgent outlier. Ideologically extreme, contemptuous of the inherited social and economic policy regime, scornful of compromise, unpersuaded by conventional understanding of facts, evidence, and science, and dismissive of the legitimacy of its political opposition. Birther, anybody? When one party moves this far from the center of American politics, it is extremely difficult to enact policies responsive to the country's most pressing challenges. Subsequent to this, I believe I recall correctly, Norman Ornstein was asked to leave his position for the American Enterprise Institute. Well, we're not going to have enough time today to get to privatization. We will leave that for next week or the following week. It's worth checking back in to listen to. You'll enjoy it. Thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.